Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Facebook flops. Euro drops, and Pandora rocks. We're going to talk about oil and gas prices, a special giveaway, and lots more on this episode number 265 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, happy Memorial Day to you. This is Andrew Horowitz, and this is episode number 265, and it is now May 28th. Or coming on May 28th, the final week of May into June 2012. Here we are already. And I have an absolute laundry list of things to talk to you about today. There is so much happening that we really need to discuss and we really need to make some heads or tails of, because the markets are in a very interesting position right now in the U.S. We're also going to talk about some of the world performance and what's going on around the world, the things that are happening with the euro and what we need to be aware of, and some special ideas that I have for you. I have about five or six different stocks that I'm going to talk about with you. But I thought we'd talk about the situation with Facebook first, because it's on everybody's mind and it's on every newsprint, media, television show, and blog that is in existence. Probably the hottest topic right now is what in the heck happened with Facebook? I mean, that IPO, the second biggest in history, turned out to be a real disaster, and it is bringing up all sorts of lawsuits, concerns about, you know, how things run inside of the markets themselves, the market makers, NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange, et cetera, and the algorithms that really may have pushed things around. There's a lot of speculation as to what actually occurred. What actually occurred was more than just simply people dumping and selling because they didn't want them in stock, insiders getting out and all. It was a matter of a technical glitch, and that's why it's costing hundreds of millions of dollars to companies like Citigroup and Morgan Stanley and all the other various underwriters, as well as some of the discount brokers like E-Trade as well as Charles Schwab are having some difficulty because the trading that they were doing was unfortunately not correct. Now, not necessarily their fault, but the fault of the systems. Because they were seeing certain price quotes and they were crossing trades internally, and then when they tried to get rid of that and put it back to the market like they do in every situation, all of a sudden the prices weren't there and they took a big bath on some of this. And they're having to actually reimburse some investors their money on prices they thought they had, on the buy side, on the sell side. And it's a real mess, and who knows how long it's going to take to really get over. But one of the things that I found this weekend of interest was a specific trade that was stuck. It was stuck at a price of about, I think, 42 or 42 and a half or so, and it lasted throughout the day. And the machines, the algorithms that tried to look at the best offer to look at what was actually happening, were actually trying to sell into that, and their sales were coming at a much different price than what they had expected, and it caused all sorts of chaos with the machines, and that's why there was such incredible volatility that first day. It wasn't necessarily, again, the individual investor or even the hedge funds that were messing things up, per se. It was the algorithms and the computers. And, yeah, while there were people selling and they were trying to take some profits in day trading and all that, the basic issue that it comes to light now is that there was a big error, a misprint, a problem with the actual markets themselves. Now, how does that happen? It could be a thousand different reasons, a technical glitch, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it's really not instilling confidence in the average investor who for a long time has been out of this market and really doesn't want to be a part of this whole game that's going on, that they know that they are really not in favor of winning right now because the machines have taken over. We talked about the rise of the machines when it comes to robotics in the economy, but what about the rise of the machines when it comes to algorithms, hedge funds trading on high-frequency basis? This is a big problem, and there's not going to be a resolution because they make too much money doing it. The regulators are going to look into it and probably not fine anybody or give them a little slap on the wrist. But in the end of the day, this is the kind of thing that needs to be looked at because it's really a travesty when it comes to investing. It no longer makes investing a proposition of looking for for value. The whole proposition of looking for a pricing factor and price discovery on an investment has really changed. And you, as the investor, need to be aware of the fact that the rules have, in fact, changed. There's no two ways about it. If you're playing by the old rules and just looking to, you know, find a certain area of support or resistance, or maybe look at some fundamental plays that may work out, the rules are different. That doesn't mean you can't get it. That doesn't mean you shouldn't invest. But as long as you play by the rules that you're aware of, and you have a full view and an open view, and you're understanding what's going on, you can be very successful at this. It may be a little bit more difficult, like trying to play chess against another person versus playing chess against a computer. But again, as long as you know that the other side is doing things a certain way, you will have some advantage over the people that don't. And I hope that makes sense. Well, we have that going on. The lawsuits are going to mount with this, and we're seeing a lot of class actions already starting. Obviously, if the situation went the opposite way, nobody would be upset, but it's always losses that people want to recoup. It's part of the entitlement environment that we live in, I guess, that, you know, nobody should lose ever, no matter what the circumstances are. And when it comes to losing on an investment that everybody thought should be a real winner, I think they get a little bit more cranky as time goes along. But one of the things I think we need to really delve into here, aside from the ridiculous nature of what happened with Facebook. By the way, we own a small piece of Facebook for our clients in the, I think it's a low 33s, low 32s, something like that, right around there. And, you know, right now, in the bigger picture, the bigger issue that really is causing all the grief with markets is the unknown and uncertainty of what's going to happen with the euro and the region as a whole. Is Greece going to step out? Are they going to be asked to leave? Is the elections on the June 17th going to be problematic, where the anti-bailout, who has a slight edge right now, the government that one of the factions is going to be possibly coming in and then just telling everybody to buzz off, and then what happens from there? Big issues, big questions, and very important questions that have to be answered. Because without those answers, the unknowns are gigantic. Just this week, there was an article that talked about how the potential cost of a bailout, or not a bailout, but a withdrawal, the exit of Greece from the euro, is somewhere in the neighborhood about $1 to $1.5 trillion. And this was a quote by the Washington-based IIF and Dallara, who said that the last estimate that they did at $1.25 trillion was back about 2 months ago. And they think that that's on the low side now. Now, the European Central Bank exposure to Greek liabilities is more than twice as big as the ECB's capital. And this guy predicted that the bank would be unable to provide liquidity and stabilize the euro area financial sector. And the big issue here is that the ECB will be insolvent, right? Isn't that what's going to happen? Because they don't have enough money to cover all of the losses. Now, it's not just Greece. Someone asked me, I said, well, is it Greece that's going to be $1.5 trillion? How does that work? They don't. Well, it's not just Greece. If you remember back in November, December, the LTRO, this was a plan that the European zone had come up with to recapitalize the banks and to stabilize the sovereign debt of countries within the zone. And in particular, what they did was they took about $1 trillion and they pushed it into the banking system. And I've mentioned this before. With a wink and a nod, they said, hey, you know what? To the banking sector, you need to purchase the bonds of the sovereign countries with this money. So those countries like Spain and Italy and Portugal, Greece, they needed to pick up this, and basically on the back end, the ECB was saying that we're going to, you know, make sure that those bonds are stable through the purchases by the financial institutions, as well as the fact that we're telling you we're going to back them in a quiet manner, of course, because they can't actually back them, be against the treaty that they put together to form the Eurozone to begin with. So what happened was that essentially, if you think about it, the ECB leveraged upon the LTRO by taking the money and giving it to the banks and then buying the sovereign bonds, thus fully leveraging the leverage already, creating a very unstable situation if, in fact, the ratings fell or, in fact, if the sovereign nations could not pay their debts. The money out of pocket would now not only be a situation that was by private investors, but the banks and the ECB themselves were on the hook, or on currently on the hook, for a lot more money than they had anticipated. And that's how this blows up into about $1.5 trillion, because the losses on that, as well as the losses by default of Greece, the CDS exposure that is really an unquantifiable number right now, is all going to come down very hard and very quickly. Already we're seeing bond spreads widen. The Spanish spreads are about, on the 10-year, about 6.4. In Germany, they hit a all-time low. In the U.S., the 10-year is, I don't know, 175 or so, very low. And that is not the shape of a market that is in happy mode. You know, this is not a market, and when I say market, I mean the totalness of it. It is not a market that is saying, hey, things are all right, the coast is clear, great, get into stocks and all, earnings are going to be fine, the economy is going to be fine. Basically, what you have right now is a market that is treading on very thin ice, but the ice is holding up, particularly here in the U.S., because the backstop is that, well, if worse comes to worse, there'll be another quantitative easing that's going to go on. But how much is that really going to help? We see what the QE1 and the QE2 and the twist and the low interest rates and all the things that have gone on so far have done. And it helped clean up the balance sheets of companies. That's great. It helped stabilize the markets. That's great. It pushed a ton of money into the banks to stabilize their situation and to make them a lot stronger, even though they still have so much work to do. That's great. But at the same time, the situation in Europe is much different. They have a dysfunctional government at best. No one can make any decisions. And when it comes to the Greek situation right now, the withdrawal, the exit of them, and the default potentially of their loans will be a catastrophic event, because it will also topple countries like Spain, which makes Greece look like a pea on a plate. Their economy is much bigger. Their bond exposure is much bigger. And then the topple effect and the ongoing domino effect of this is going to be very great. So that's really what we're looking at right now. The euro hit a 22-month low just last Friday. And really, there's no plans in force right now, because until the June 17th elections in Greece, if that is the date, who knows what kind of postponements we'll have, who knows what's going to happen between now and then. But if those elections go in a way that have the bailout, the anti-bailout faction, the government factions that come and will lead, and they say, you know, basically just, hey, thanks but no thanks, big problems. But until then, the ECB and the IMF and everybody else involved is not going to want to put any more money and any more plans into the system, because they don't know what the outcome is going to be. They cannot afford to put any more money on the line, any more plans into place, because it may be broken up within a matter of 3 weeks. So I guess just to finish the point off is that we can't rest on our laurels right now. One of the things that we've done is continually move in and out of short hedges in our portfolios, our trading portfolios, and to keep a very high level of bonds right now in our global allocations, and be very careful to watch certain levels on stocks, because if you get past in what we call a fast zone on the downside, you could really be obliterated very quickly in a name, and you don't want that to happen. Take profits quickly and then redeploy the money back in if, in fact, the stock continues and the markets turn to a different direction. And if there is some kind of resolution that will happen, you're set. Kind of have both sides playing at the same time, both your hedges, short positions, and long positions. Talking about some long positions, we had put an alert out on Trigger Point Research, I think about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, on Pandora, the online music subscription service. And there was so much bad sentiment, so much high level of short interest. Stock was in a situation that if, in fact, they did a good job on earnings, if the earnings situation was better than anticipated, which was pretty low, then the stock had the opportunity to really climb. Shorts will be blown out. You see a little bit of a short squeeze. And then from there, what you saw was a direct move into what we call a fast zone, and that pushed the stock up about 15 or 18% for the week or so. That was great. Now, I'll tell you in a second a little bit more about a special offer that we're doing, a giveaway through the end of May, which is coming up very shortly to a conclusion. So if you haven't done it yet, you're going to get a little bit more time. I also want to mention oil and gas pricing. Have you seen what's going on lately with the oil and gas prices? Oil has clearly, for the last several weeks, been in an absolute tailspin, down, cracked 90 last week, came back up a little bit. But that's good, right in the time for Memorial Day. How interesting is that? We'll see what happens after Memorial Day. My bet is that it will start climbing again. Dollar has been rising right along to it, and you see always an, kind of a contrary reaction with the dollar and oil commodities. Commodities have been under pressure dramatically. So just keep an eye on oil right now, because I would think that there is the potential for oil to see a little bit of a bounce here moving forward. Gasoline prices have come down at the pump a little bit. I think we're averaging about $360 at the pump right now on average for unleaded. And again, that's good for Memorial Day, for driving, consumption, et cetera. We should see an interesting level of inventories next week and the week after, considering the fact that there's probably going to be a pretty good drawdown to recap and to refine additional oil after Memorial Day holiday. So last week on the show, we talked a little bit about the whole idea of a big bounce coming. I wrote about it on Sunday night, talked a little bit about it on the podcast, and sure enough, it happened on Monday. I mean, it couldn't have been any better. And that was great. The market was up 1.5%. Dow and NASDAQ was up a little bit higher. S&P was up about 1.5% on Monday. And it was from a very interesting point. The Spearman indicator gave us a good indication. The Trendstall indicator gave us a good indication. McClellan oscillator gave us a good indication. And the question right now is, where are we? When you look at the S&P chart on a daily basis, the opportunity for a bear flag to be forming is pretty high. Basically means that you see a drop pretty sharply, a consolidation over a period of a couple weeks, and then a potential for another drop, the same length and distance and potentially speed as the last drop, the last leg down. And that would take us down to about 1230 on the S&P 500. The question is, will that happen? Last summer, we saw a very similar situation happen and didn't really occur. A half a bear flag happened, a small bear flag, we'll call it. But yet, at the same time, you have to wonder if that's going to happen this time around. And is it different now? Well, then the economy was kind of slowing down, and questions about a recession were coming up again, just like they are now. And we saw a better employment situation, which is not exactly what we're seeing now. It seems to be slowing down a bit, even though the unemployment rate is probably going to get better due to the very questionable labor participation rate. And then from there, we have the European situation that is, you know, really in bad shape. The difference from this year to last year was the amount of ammunition that the ECB had at their disposal and the potential for other initiatives here in the U.S. The bigger issue is what's going to happen at the end of this year, and that's where a lot more fear will be drawn in, because we have the expiration of the Bush tax cuts coming, the fiscal cliff, as they call it. So keep that in mind and watch for that bear flag. If it does start to appear, we will post that on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll make sure to do that. Two things I want to mention, and then I want to talk about the some world returns. I want to talk about the recent interesting situations that are developing in China. I want to talk about the payrolls for next week. First of all, I'll mention real quickly that this episode is sponsored by GoToMeeting. And if you haven't tried GoToMeeting yet, this is a really great thing. As a matter of fact, you're going to get an opportunity soon, because we're going to have a webinar that's going to be using GoToMeeting for everybody. And I'll tell you about that not in the next episode or so. But basically, GoToMeeting is something that is a great tool to save you time. It saves you money. It saves you aggravation, because it's very easy to use. You can communicate. You can share. You can see people with their new HD Faces program they have. And it's just, I don't know, it's just one of those great inventions by Citrix. And there's a couple of other programs out there, but this is really a great one because it makes it so easy. You can record your sessions. You can do things like have surveys in there. You can have audience participation if you want to have a big webinar. You can just do a one-on-one. Great things. You could also get a 30-day free trial right now going to gotomeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code podcast. And be sure to use the promo code podcast to get that free, absolutely free 30 days of GoToMeeting, and you'll enjoy that. The other thing I want to mention to you before we go is, and I'm going to tell you about, not go, but going to the next topic, we have the book special, the book giveaway, The Disciplined Investor, The Winning Investor. If you want to know more and if you want to play along at home with some of the trading ideas that we have over at Trigger Point Research, and I'm going to tell you some of the stocks we recently had and some ideas, go to triggerpointresearch.com/subscribe, and you can get a free book if you subscribe in May. Everyone that subscribes, a new subscriber in May, a new membership in May to any of the alerts, gets a book. I'll sign it to you personally, and hopefully you enjoy that. But more importantly, I'm trying to tell you this, and I want to make sure that I'm really pounding the desk hard on this. If you're looking for great ideas, I think we have something that you really will like. You may not get an alert every day. You may not get it every 2 days. You may get five in one day, shorts, longs. We give you stops. We give you target prices. We give you charts. We tell you exactly what is kind of happening there over at Trigger Point Research. So if you haven't had an opportunity, and if you need a little bit of a push, here is not only a push, but a giant shove. Go to triggerpointresearch.com/subscribe, triggerpointresearch.com/subscribe, and you get your free book for anyone that is newly subscribing to one of the alerts. You can either get it by text or email. You know, it's really cool how this all works. Go check it out right now. All right, so let's segue over to what's going on with world markets. I did a quick snapshot of the major markets around the world just to see kind of and give you perspective of what's happening and how things have changed over the last couple of months. The Dow Jones is up about 1.9% for the year. It was up like almost 10 or so percent for the year for a while. S&P is up 4.5% or so, NASDAQ up 8%. But really what I want to focus in is how horribly bad, how terrible the European markets have done. Amazing that the Spanish market is down another 23% this year. That's in U.S. terms, 26%. That's in domestic terms. In their currency, it's down 26. I want to look at the FTSE, UK, it's down 4%. The French markets are down 3%. These are all markets that were up substantially more. You know, you look at Hang Seng, the Hong Kong market, up 1.5%. The Nikkei up 1.5%. Again, these things dropped probably 9, 10, 12% in the last several weeks and the last, you know, maybe, I don't know, 2 months because of all of the problems, not only with the European situation, but with the slowdown in China. And let's talk about that a little bit because China has been slowing. The latest numbers that we saw out of their PMI, the flash PMI, was in contraction zone again for the seventh month in a row. And we're about to find out very shortly what they have for the quote-unquote official numbers that are out of China. You know, one of the things that you can probably tell and take away is every single day when the prime minister has been talking about how, wow, they're going to instill further growth and domestic growth and they're going to do everything in their power and they're pledging on a daily basis. It's kind of a, I don't know, it looks like a giveaway to me that something is really wrong and under the surface they're very concerned. And in addition to that, they're allowing for a more open access to the banking industry by foreign capital. They're going to instill an idea that, well, hey, we want to allow foreign capital into our financial system now. Well, if things were really good, if they could handle things on their own, do you think they would actually be going out and broadcasting the fact that, hey, we want your money now? And at the same time, they're doing their best to try to relax rules at the banks, but bank lending is expected to come in under, significantly under, the expected loans that they were anticipating, which means that there's not that much of a demand. So it's more so not only the aspect of growth slowing down, them, in fact, as a government trying to slow down the inflation situation, but demand is down. And I think that's something that we really should pay attention to. Meanwhile, in Hong Kong, we're seeing that the prices of real estate, particularly for leasing the real estate in the highest metropolitan areas is at the, I mean, some ridiculous level. You know, it makes New York and a few other places look silly. And at the same time, we're seeing that, you know, we have the ongoing problem with their exports that is slowing down significantly. Their currency has been dropping, and you know, the powers that be in the U.S. who constantly are talking about the currency manipulation thing, which I think they finally realized that if they call China a currency manipulator, they're going to have to call themselves a currency manipulator. I mean, it's all the same game that everybody's playing, right? So what's happening right now is that with the with their currency, they're not increasing it because they realize, and as I said probably months ago, and as some of my guests have talked about, we don't understand how increasing their currency against the dollar is actually going to stoke anything but a slowdown. It's going to slow down their exports. It's going to create a more difficult environment for them. If everybody in the world is dropping their currency value through quantitative easing or through other measures, and that's intended to do so that they can boost their exports, how is China going to continue being the world powerhouse of exports if they increase their currency, particularly when it comes to the U.S.? I don't know if we try to, you know, fake them out or something, or if I don't know. But it didn't seem to be an idea that would work for me. And I think they're finding that out right now and bringing down the peg or the currency valuation compared to the U.S. dollar right now. And, of course, the European situation, which is a big problem for them because a drop in the euro is going to make their exports so much more expensive for Europeans, which is one of their biggest trading partners. Well, next week we have coming up the NFP payrolls. This is the we have a few things that come up. We have the Case-Shiller numbers on Tuesday. We have consumer confidence. Now, consumer confidence by the University of Michigan came out on Friday, and it was the highest number in years for the current situation. The expectations number rolled down, but the current situation was pretty good, and that's kind of amazing with all the things that are going on, the bickering in the political scene, the end of your fiscal cliff, the you know, potential for tax rates increasing, gas prices being higher, European murmurs around the nuclear situation in Iran, and consumer confidence came in on a final number 2 points higher than the last two readings for the month. What is that about? How did that all happen? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Wage increases haven't happened. Unemployment is a little bit better, but it's better on a statistical basis, but it's not better on a numbers, raw numbers basis. So somehow, magically, University of Michigan consumer confidence number on a current situation came in much better. Outlook declined, but the decline that we have seen in the conference board's numbers that's coming out on Tuesday, we'll see if that changes, and that's going to hold in a trend down. So we have that coming out. We also have, of course, on Wednesday, the ADP numbers, and on Friday, we have coming out the NFP numbers. Now, by all expectations, you should see a drop in the 100 and, well, an increase of jobs and a drop in the unemployment rate. You know, are we going to see a breakdown of the 8 level? Is that going to break this time or thereabouts? I mean, if in fact we keep seeing all of these the expiration of the extended benefits for unemployment, and that those people will come off the payrolls and those people will come out of the labor participation force, well, maybe. Is it possible? Is anybody going to cheer? Last time around, even though it dropped pretty significantly on the unemployment rate, people kind of got wise to the situation and realized that if you didn't have this drop in the labor participation rate, you still have probably close to a 9.5% plus unemployment rate. So for politics, it looks good. For reality, questionable. But again, we'll put some more analysis up after the ADP number comes up so we can see between the initial claims that come up and the ADP numbers and expectations, how they play out, probably around Wednesday or Thursday on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll put up all this information on expectations and where numbers really need to lie in order for them to push markets in a good way. But there are some plays you can look at for that ahead of the numbers, of course. The companies like Ultimate Software or Monster Worldwide, Robert Half. You know, the employment companies are the ones that you want to kind of look at and see how they react to the numbers. And, of course, you can look at the consumer discretionary names. If there is a good jobs number that comes out, there's going to be a lot of people that say, hey, wait a minute. Well, consumers are still here. We got high confidence. That's really great. The fact is that, on the other hand, if we do not see a good number, I would suspect that if you see anything under 100,000 ads for the period, there's going to be a real market meltdown. Maybe not a meltdown, 4, 5, 6%. I mean, but people are just going to kind of say, you know what? Yes, we are seeing an absolute slowdown. The seasonality is over. And the whole idea that we saw a great bump in the first quarter with unemployment and the employment rate down was because of this great warm weather. And it was a big pull forward. And we think that it was a false idea and a false premise to believe that the economy was healing that, you know, brilliantly in the beginning of the year. And they're going to see an economy that has slowed and has a lot of headwinds, and that's going to be a big problem. So keep a watch at that, and you know, keep a watch on the levels up into it. Usually what happens is, and you've heard me say this a few times, usually what happens is that the week of the this period, the last week of the year into the first week of the last week of the month into the first week of the new month, and in particular when you have this in a situation where you have, for example, a asset allocation rebalance, reallocation by funds that may be getting out of some bonds into stocks. You have a heightened expectation of some good numbers coming out. You have a bad month behind you. You have a performance chase that goes on towards the beginning of the week. And then, you know, you'll kind of see a little bit of a, you know, questionable level at Wednesday, Thursday. And then on Friday is when kind of the decision is made whether they're going to bulk up or drop. Friday, we saw some of the lowest volume on the markets of the year, if not the lowest volumes of the markets for the year. And that's kind of expected into the summer, and that's expected into the Memorial Day. That's expected when you see a lot of the headwinds that are happening right now that could occur over the weekend. Not a lot of people wanted to press their long exposure, no question about that. And traders really wanted to flatten out positions that they may have put on, you know, into the day or week or month, for that matter, into the end. So if you see some decent news over the weekend, into the beginning of the week, you can see a little bit of a pop here. A few stocks I want to mention that I want you to take a look at. You know, one of the things that we have been seeing has been a rotation into the more defensive levels, defensive stocks, defensive sectors. So, for example, you have the healthcare, you have consumer staples, telecom, utilities. And out of the energies, technology, right, consumer discretionary, there's a few stocks that we had alerted over the last several weeks at Trigger Point Research on the alerts, and also for clients that are our trading clients. We do a lot of the same type of investing. We talked about GNC Holdings. This is the healthcare store, the vitamin supplement store, if you will. They are doing very well. Now, the stock is a little bit extended here, but if we do break a little bit higher from this level, you could see some really reasonable upside opportunity. And GNC Holdings has been in a great uptrend, holding up really well, and their last earnings report was stellar. So we're kind of going to keep an eye on that. And again, we did alert that some time ago, and it is looking very sharp right now. Now, obviously, any sell-off in the markets is going to affect, you know, 80% of stocks. You can't be too resilient in a market when they're just pounding everything down. Index futures are being used and just kind of as a broad-based sell-off, and that's going to, you know, it sells down everything. ETF selling is going to obviously bring down the broad-based markets, and individual stocks will have a hard time holding up. So you need to be careful when the markets are in a strong downtrend, as we see from our market trend indicator, the MTI, we call it. So look at GNC Holdings. Just look at the chart. Just consider it. Just, you know, kind of keep an eye on it. If markets do turn into an uptrend eventually, whenever it is, markets do cycle from, you know, downtrends to uptrends over time. They can be short, they can be long, they can be you know, kind of a quick move in either direction that causes the trend to change. But GNC Holdings is really a great fundamental story, as well as a good story when it comes to the you know, overall technical. So I just keep a look at that and take a look at that. Also, look at United Therapeutics. This is an interesting stock. This stock is part of the healthcare area, which has done very, very well. You know, you look at the healthcare area and the stocks and the biotechs and then the discovery of diseases and the healthcare in general, excluding things like hospitals, pharmaceuticals are also been good. But when you look at the ones that are in the biotech area, and particularly in distribution as well as discovery of diseases, this has been a nice little performer right here. It needs to get above probably about 15 cents, higher than the close, about 44.25 from where it closed on Friday. But there's a breakout zone and a fast zone that seems to be approaching. SXCI is another one. SXCI Solutions is a medical, we'll call it a records company. There's a few different ones like this that is involved in the automation and the technology of medicine. And in a world that when you look at medicine for records and for patient discovery as well as patient tracking, this is a company where the benefits are all to them because there's only a few companies that really are involved here. They recently picked up another company which is going to expand their potential. And if you look at the chart there, again, another really nice performer. And it trades a little bit thinner, but keep an eye on that stock too. These are all ideas that I want you to take a look at. We did alert these in the last several weeks. We do have positions in these, so I want to make sure we're fully disclosed on that. But just things that you need to look at. Now, on the long side, there's one other that I want you to consider. With all this Facebook hubbub and the Zynga drop and the social media, and the gaming sector is still very hot when it comes to the mobile device market. In fact, it's so hot that if you look at the traditional gaming companies, the companies that make the games for PCs and Xbox and all the different devices that are non-mobile related, they are really having a hard time. They're really seeing a lot of breakdown in their users. Why? Because people are using them on mobile devices. And there's a lot of alternative companies that are coming in. One of the big things that is happening right now is the change of venue or decision by Congress to allow for online gaming. Now, one of the biggest things is you have poker, for example. You have maybe blackjack. You have a variety of different gaming structures that may come into play here. Well, Glue Mobile, yeah, they have Deer Hunter and a few others, but they have a nice poker game, and they are a brilliant developer. There's only a few of these out there that are publicly traded, like a Zynga. And the potential for them to be bought up, to be acquired, is very high. We saw that, with the Instagram purchase at a ridiculous level by Facebook just to get an app in there, even though they just came, I don't understand this. Facebook came out with another app that does the same thing as Instagram after they bought the Instagram. I'll have to look into that a little further. I don't really understand why they did that. But when you look at the online gaming or the mobile gaming platforms that are out there right now and the developers, it is a big opportunity. And when you have a company like this, like Glue Mobile, GLUU. It trades under $5, but if it ever gets above $5, the opening is pretty dramatic for another quick 20% move on the upside. So is it fully developed? No, it's a small company. It has a small market cap, which you see a small price. And more importantly, it has a lot of questions. They are starting to do much better. Their losses are dissipating. And their outlook looks really sound. And the better part of all this is that analysts are finally starting to pick up coverage on this. That's good. You saw when, for example, I think 2 weeks ago, or maybe a week and a half ago, one of the Nazarian brothers mentioned it on CNBC as one of their top picks. And the stock was up like 12% within minutes. Now, this thing is wildly traded. You got to leave wide stops. It's a stock kind of, quote unquote, under 10. And it is speculative, but it's something that we hold a small position in our portfolios. And we haven't alerted this yet because we're waiting for that $5 level to come into play. That may be, the best place to move into this. And the other one that I'll mention to you is Chart Industries. The area of retrofitting trucks and cars and using natural gas for an alternative fuel has been very hotly debated. There's a couple of companies in this space, and it does seem like there's a great opportunity here. You look at clean energy fuels, and that stock chart looks horrible. You look at Westport Innovations, horrible. These are companies that we held a position in, made a little profit, made some losses, and got out of them because there's way too much volatility and there's not enough support here, especially when gas prices come down. When gas prices come down, the idea of, should we switch over to natural gas? Well, maybe not yet, because gas prices will go lower. With coal prices and, you know, imploding, if you didn't see Patriot Coal last week and Alpha Natural Resources and a few others, oh, man, that was ugly. Patriot Coal was down 60% in one day. It was down to about $1.50 when it was, I think it was 30 or so about a year ago. And the problem is that natural gas prices being so low, there's a lot of conversion going on in the manufacturing and factories and in the large trucking industry. Question, though, is why can't these companies make any money? Well, one of the reasons is it's not legal for the most part for a lot of these conversions to take place. So you got to keep it, you know, hush-hush, and it's not widely accepted. The rules that were going to be put in place didn't pass Congress to make it more affordable and make it something that is going to be advantageous. So the expense of doing it and the lack of filling stations is a big problem. Filling stations being Clean Energy Fuels, one of the, if not the only, provider of natural gas fueling stations and, you know, big part of Boone Pickens' idea of natural gas for everyone. But GLTS is a stock that we see, again, an aggressive play, but we are short, and we're actually in the money on this short, and it's questionable how much more this can fall if markets continue to weaken. Now, if markets obviously get strong and you just have everything going up, well, you'll see a bit of a a short cover here and a turnaround. But just keep an eye on this. If it drops right at these levels that we're seeing right now, you're in a fast zone right now. And if you see it dropping any lower, interesting. NetEase is another one that's been a fine player for many years, and we owned it long for a long time, made some nice money on it. And then it started to get really weak along with all of the China internet companies as well as the China gaming companies and the Asian companies. Something you want to look at, NetEase, as a potential short play. All right, let's see what else we got here. Let's see if I covered everything. We'll go through the whole list. I wrote a lot of stuff down here. Okay, one other thing I want to cover is the whole idea of, I think this is important, and you have a little time, an extra day off here, and I want you to contemplate something. The whole idea of how are you as an investor? Are you thinking that you're always right, that you know, markets should be doing something, but then you get burned by it? Do you think that, I can't take this loss and you freak out and I sell? Or, man, everybody's buying that, I'm going to buy. What are you using as your basic core disciplines? What are you using as the ideas and the basic strategies for entering and exiting? Do you have them written down? We've talked about this in the past a lot. So for the new listeners, it's going to be kind of new, but for the old listeners that have been here for years, you may hear this again, and it may be a good reinforcement of the basic principles of investing, is that, you know, you got to leave your emotions at the door. It's very difficult when there's money on the table, but you got to leave your emotions at the door. When you're trading, think of it like, using chips. The dollars are important. The money is important. But at the same time, you have to use some very important disciplines, whether you're going to buy at this level as a breakout, whether you're going to say, okay, there's my stop because of this, stick to the rules. If you want to buy because something's moving lower, just because the fact is moving lower, that's not a good enough reason. Maybe there's a fundamental reason that it is moving lower. Yeah, sure. A stock can be selling off way too much. For example, we think that Verifone, Pay, P-A-Y, has sold off way too much. And there's an opportunity for a quick pickup on this. Analysts have come out and liked the numbers that they've seen before. We're a little bit cold on the recent numbers and the acquisition that they made that has a big footprint inside of Europe with Hyperion is a bit concerning. But that is something that, you know, in the payment mode area, how long is that going to play out for when everything's going to credit? Is competition, et cetera? Yeah, sure. But the kind of sell-off that we saw over the last several weeks in Verifone and into the earnings, after the earnings, is pretty a bit overdone. Why? Well, from a fundamental reason, it's overdone. But secondly, and more importantly, it's got a very good support level right a little bit above here, but right around this level. And it fell right to the same point and then went below the level that we had projected. And that means that there's a little bit of a discount involved there. And so we pick some up on Friday, a small position on Friday. I went down a little bit lower as the markets kind of caved in towards the end of the day. than our buy price. But you know what? We'll hold it till it gets down past that support that we laid out through our strategy on this. And if it fails, well, hey, we'll take the loss and we'll move forward. And if it starts to move the other direction, we'll add to the position. So again, you have to figure out, you know, the markets are always right. You can make a call on something and be wrong, and you have to be able to say, hey, I'm out. At the same time, when you're right, you need to add to your position and be right about it until you're wrong, until things move the different way, and then admit, hey, you know what? This is not working right now. I'm going to take this off the table for a little while or take a piece off, take some profits if they're profitable, and then move forward. If there's a loss, okay, take a loss. Nothing worse than taking a loss and holding on to it and making it a bigger loss, especially in a market that is in a strong downtrend. You got to play by multifaceted rules than looking at the overall market, multiple time frames, support resistance levels, etc. You have to look at all of this, the macroeconomic situation. So just keep that in mind. But if anything that I'm going to tell you right now can stick is that write down your rules before you enter. Don't do anything impulsively. The stock will move. How much is it going to move? You know, how much is it going to move? A little bit if you take that few seconds to write down the rules. It can help you immensely, because when you're thinking about and panicking about something, you reflect back on what you wrote, and you may say, well, I must have been wrong when I was writing that. No, you reflect back on all the research you did, what you wrote, what you wanted to do, and stick to those rules. More often than not, it'll work out in your favor, unless you're just an absolutely awful investor, and then just, you know, stop doing it. You know what I'm saying? So again, a discipline is important, creating stops, targets. If a stock moves up to your target price, take some off the table. You can always add back to it if, in fact, you were wrong by taking some off, and keep following the trend higher. The idea is not to make a home run on every single transaction. It's to have a lot of singles and doubles. That's the play, because if you try to hit a home run on any particular trade, you may do some. But at the same time, you know what's going to happen? You're going to strike out here and there on a big trade, and it's really going to take you down pretty hard. And then your confidence is blown, and then the next entries you're going to be soft on. And so why even get yourself involved and get yourself set up like that? The market is a mysterious place. But if you do follow certain rules, it's like anything else. The rules that are set out in, you know, books and in strategies and in messages and in teachings and seminars, I mean the good ones. I'm not talking about the fly-by-night ones, not the, you know, the ones that will have you do these crazy things just because something moves in a certain way, or, you know, tracks the moon cycles, or the trends based on the constellations. I mean, you know, some basic strategies, and at the same time adjust them to the market conditions, like we talked about at the top of the show, where we talked about how there's a bit of a change in how the trading is going on right now. Well, that's what you want to do. All right, with that, we're going to close. I have a Memorial Day. Getting sentimental. I got a Memorial Day song that I found that I thought was pretty cool. If you want to listen to it, if not, you can cut out. And of course, if you want to find out more about our management, how we manage money for clients directly, $50,000 minimum, just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a little button to click there. It says a little blue thing, find out more. And you'll see a 10 or 12 minute video, a little tutorial, a little kind of guide to what we do, how we do it, and why you want to be involved. Because, this market demands a lot more than just being long and holding and hoping. Got to be long, got to be short, you got to use options, all that stuff these days. Anyway, listen to this song. I think it's pretty good. Have a great Memorial Day, and I'll see you real soon. Thanks for joining. Bye-bye. Soldiers who've died.
got to be another way. In Seattle, down in New Orleans, Highland Park, New Jersey, in Nashville, Tennessee, it's a whisper. You can't quite make it out. Let's keep the whisper growing till it becomes a shout. Every May, every Memorial Day. We have raised every child to be loving, to play fair, and to do whatever's right, to be kind.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.